Hello and welcome to another episode of the American Soccer Analysis Show. I am your host, Kieran, and I'm joined by Harrison Highlife Crow and Benjamin on the scene of the USL final. Bellman, gentlemen, how are you doing?
Doing awesome.
Yeah, we both had a good weekend, huh?
Yeah, in different, very different ways. And Harrison, we're going to get to yours, but we'll start with Ben's. Ben, you went to the USL final between the Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Is that correct? Is that the correct Colorado town? And Rhode Island, who it was news to me that they have a USL team. I was aware of their statehood, but not of their USL-hood. 3-0 to the Switchbacks. Tell us about the game. Tell us what you saw in person. We'll put actually, before you go, listeners, you'll hear a little audio note of Ben at the stadium, which I don't think he remembers what he said in.
No, not a thing.
But here is Ben live from Colorado Springs.
Well, they're setting up the stage for the Colorado Switchbacks victory trophy celebration. They are USL championship champions with a 3-win over Rhode Island FC. It was an intense first half. Switchbacks came out flying. They got the goal after 20 minutes off an assist from Yusuke Hanya. Tejada scored that goal. Tejada had a great game all around. And honestly, I don't know if it was on the CBS broadcast, but it made it over the PA at one point. Rhode Island needed to get off the bus, and quite frankly, they did. They did not have any cohesive passing through the midfield. Colorado Springs were not scared of their press. They played out of the back. It was a little dicey a couple times, but their game plan made this work. Their home fans were behind them, and their players got it done after having some dicey moments on the playoff back end. So this was a great experience. I'm super impressed by this stadium, by this club, by Rhode Island away support.
Fans,
it was all
incredible.
I'd
now like to set it down to the pitch where we have Marion Crowder speaking with today's
I'm
match MVP,
number
17,
So, 3-0. Ben, tell us about the game. Tell us about USL. Tell us what we need to know.
So, it was a blast. The first thing I noticed just walking was incredible stadium. I had not been down there before. I'm a Colorado guy. I have not spent much time in the Springs, so it was cool to just see what it's like down there. Beautiful stadium. Second thing I noticed was how well they played. So doing my research for the game, it's not like I had been tangentially aware that Rhode Island had been surprising people along the way, that was a story. So I had been keeping track of that. Had not been keeping track of Switchbacks. You look at the run up. Rhode Island was on the road the whole way. Switchbacks was at home the whole way. Rhode Island had been dominating in like the games and in the underlying numbers. Switchbacks had been sort of more defensive, sort of hanging on through all the games. And then at the final, it totally was on its head. Colorado Springs controlled the game pretty quickly. They scored in the 20th minute off a quick break. A wide ball to Yosuke Hanya, who's a loanee from the Rapids, actually. Played a lot of time in Rapids, too, last year. So he made a good step over in the box, centered it to Juan Tejada, who scored. That really set the tone from there. They were in control for most of the first half and then bagged a second one. Then Hanya got injured on, which was not great to see. But they were up 2-0 at half, and Rhode Island really needed to step it up and just never did. They had a corner trying to score, totally wide open on defense, absolutely no one back, instant break. You know, it's like a 70-yard run, slots it in the corner right next to me where I was in the media area. Super fun. Like, whole crowd was going, sold out stadium. Really, really great time.
What do we know about the Switchbacks, like, analytical inclinations? Do we know anything about them?
I have no idea. Their history has been really interesting because when they first came into USL championship, my impression was it was a little unstable. Like, there were like questions after like years three or four, as is the case in these types of situations. Like, do they have the support? Can they keep it going, you know, financially and locally? They got a stadium deal in downtown Colorado Springs done. Downtown anywhere in Colorado other than Denver is not necessarily what you'd think of, and if you're like from the East Coast or something, but it's a great location for the stadium in the middle of everything. Like, easy drive from anywhere in that metro area to get to the stadium. So it's accessible, support, like decked out, like the stadium was good. The gear was everywhere. People were buying into this club in the Springs. Like I saw it firsthand. I was really, really impressed with it. So that was, I don't, I, oh, and the club had some like affiliation with the Rapids for a while. They are no longer so affiliated. They do send a decent number of players there on loan still, especially if they like want serious minutes. That's pretty much the pathway now. Like one or two players that they know want to play at a level just below MLS. That's usually who ends up at the Springs, I would say. But apart from that, I have no idea. I'm not familiar with anyone in the FO there.
It's very interesting, kind of like, so I follow USL 1 much more closely than I do USL 2 because North Colorado Hailstorm were like somebody who were into G Plus and stuff like that, and actually one of their key staffers actually has now made the move to the new Portland Hearts of Pine Club, shout out James Halepo, and it's very funny to see, like, I'm looking at the Colorado Springs like G plus tables, and you have like guys like Speedy Williams. So like Speedy Williams is somebody that I played against in college who when I was in my first year of college, he was at Robert Morris and we played a preseason game against him, and he was unbelievable. Unbelievable, and now has like 35 caps for Jamaica, but is like league average by G plus. And actually, their whole team doesn't really stand out by G plus to the point that like I'm looking at it and I'm like, how did these guys win the league? Because if you
Well,
go by the whole, if you look at the kind of the whole league tables, they don't even have a player on the first page, which is pretty crazy of 30. So I'm curious. I haven't looked at the XG tables and stuff like that, but it sounds like they were pretty dominant in the final from your
yeah.
description.
They definitely were, and I would say it was a surprise at how dominant. I think people gave them a decent edge because they had the home field advantage, and it was going to be tough for Rhode Island to play their style. But I think it was far more in their advantage than people expected. I don't know if it was a style thing. I don't know how like any of the teams they beat on the way, like Las Vegas Lights or anything, having to sort of suffer ball through what people have called some pretty talented teams, even though they did finish second in the league. Like they pretty much ran the table at home. And actually at the stadium after they won the championship, in one of the interviews, they mentioned over the PA that they had started the league like 1-5-1 actually. So like, and pretty much turned it around from there to get to the second seed in the Western Conference. So they
Yeah.
didn't pop analytically, but they
No,
certainly
like
consistently did well all year.
plus 3 expected goal difference over the whole season. And you have like, actually, here's a really, you want to see a really crazy one. Tampa Bay Rowdies put up a plus 33 expected goal difference and a plus 8 goal difference. They had 77 XG and only scored 53 goals off of it.
What?
And their
Oh
XGA
my
is
God.
perfectly in line. That is so painful. That is so painful. Wow. And then on the flip side of that, you have Louisville who put up a plus 31 expected goal difference with a plus 42 goal difference. So very, very interesting in USL. Harrison, is there a USL team out your way? Tacoma Defiance were
Yeah, there's the
USL
Tacoma
before, right?
Defiance. There's also USL one team that's standing up in West Seattle.
Spokane.
I believe I'm trying to think. I think Roman Torres is going to be one of the coaches or one of the individuals that are involved with that. And then of course you have over in Spokane. I can't talk. Spokane. They have a team out that way. So.
Well,
As I've dutifully like mispronounced that name twice on purpose, so I
there
feel
is
like my obligation as a coastie is fulfilled. I don't
the
know if you
regional
general,
out.
I don't know if you guys understand the differences between one side of the mountain to the other, but they are quite significant.
Oh, that is that a real thing? Like Spokane
Oh
versus
yeah.
Spokon? Is that what it
No,
is?
it's Spokane. Like it's 100%
Yeah,
Spokane.
that's what I
Okay.
thought.
No, it's 100% Spokane. Like, but at the same time, like they just It's just kind of
It's a
dude,
rivalry.
I'm trying to do my Kendrick Lamar thing here. Let me be.
Oh, we sorry. That's a we can't talk about that on this podcast. Some other USL adjacent news. Eric Quill, who is the manager of New Mexico United, who put up like a respectable +4 expected goal difference, but allegedly were like quite good to watch in that, is now the FC Dallas manager. So there's a little USL train along the way. And the new Phoenix United, Phoenix, is that what they're called? Phoenix
Phoenix
Rising,
Rising.
is Pamudu Ka has left Charlotte to be their manager. So a lot of fun, a lot of fun USL stuff. And I think like if you're checking out the G plus tables, like you can do a lot of really interesting stuff just by peeking into USL because there are players in there who pop in really exciting ways and have tremendous upwards mobility from the league. Like if you look at Diego Luna was a USL guy. If you look at I can't remember his name, the Mexican kid who went to RSL and then got sold in like 2 months
I don't know why I'm blinking, but
and
I
wasn't
know
even
exactly who you're
good.
talking about.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
So that guy who got sold to
Or
Mexico
he
for
came
$4
from Charleston
million.
Battery?
Yes, correct. It is from Charleston Battery. I can't remember his name at all.
Yeah.
Regardless, there's legit talent there to find players. And of course, like ASA is legitimately the only
Fidel
employment.
Barajas.
Thank you. Yes, Fidel Barajas. Was that right? Was it RSL?
Yeah. No, I
Yeah.
knew. Yeah, I knew you had the you had all the teams aligned and just trying to figure that out. Yeah.
But yeah, ASA is the only place on the planet that you are getting USL data like this. So definitely check it out. And of course, we've got the USL Super League, the women's side on there as well,
Yes.
which is pretty cool. Moving on from USL, unless Ben, you have any other final thoughts you want to leave us with, we have the conference finals are set, ladies and gentlemen. We have the fabulous, raging New York Red Bulls are playing Orlando City in
Which I
Orlando.
can only assume you're ex like through the roof with excitement that
I'm very
Orlando has
excited for the
continued
Red
to.
Bulls. I'm very upset that Orlando continued to admonish my TV screen. And on the other side, we have Seattle who upset LAFC playing the Los Angeles Galaxy. Let's start in the East because I think this one is decidedly less watchable. And if we decide to move on, there's more time for the other series. I'm going to toot my own horn
You should.
because the New York Red Bull, New York City FC game happened exactly how I said it would.
No,
And
it played out perfectly, dude.
there was a blue sky post from an individual that I am trying to find their exact name so I can shout them out because it really was like perfect. Patrick Dahawan, I am not Batman, took the transcript of what exactly what I said word for word. The other half, here's a fun one. New York City, and I'll preface this with all the necessary caveats. Correlation doesn't equal causation. There's some pretty sizable game state effects in here, but New York City FC did not win any of their six highest possession games. They won two of their highest 11, three of their highest 14. If you give them the ball, they struggle. Now, that's kind of not really what happened in this game, other than the Red Bull gave them the ball and NYCFC didn't score. But the Red Bull absolutely gave them the ball. The game was pretty even until 2-0. And then they said, haha, have fun, and defended the rest of the game. NYCFC put up like a huge 3.6 XG for our model. Opta has it quite a bit lower at 2.8. And that'll vary a lot because one of the things that Doyle was talking about and I replied to on Blue Sky was about, I think a really key thing to think about in this is like actually there are huge game state effects here, not just in that like NYCFC get to rack up shots, but also in that the Red Bull defended so deep after that that like all of the shots are under way more pressure than you think they are. And it
Yeah,
was, they were
there's some.
bad.
I'm kind of curious what you guys think about those type when when Extra Time kind of talked about, they talked about the skewing XG model, and I'm kind of curious what you guys all think about when you guys and Devin wrote a really good article this past weekend about talking about narratively utilizing XG and trying to put it within the proper tone. Ben, great job. Like, I think you were the one that retweeted it out on my timeline that I saw it. But if you guys go out there, Central Winger on I don't remember what platform, but you can find it on Blue Sky. I'm curious what you guys are kind of think about when you think narratively utilizing XG, because I think, Kieran, the way you're headed with it is perfectly thinking about the conditions of the game, the score line, and how that affects the defense and the quality of those shots.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Yeah,
so. You go,
just
Kieran.
shouting it out. It is Central Winger, centralwinger.com is the exact posting of it. I think it's run through the newsletter thing that everyone uses,
Substack.
Substack. But it
Thank
is
you.
centralwinger.com. It's on Blue Sky, and it's just, you can type in centralwinger.com to find it. And there is a great piece there on rebounds and XG and penalties and things like that. Ben, go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, Devin, his example was specifically looking at penalties and penalty rebounds, and like instantly, if you were to take those two shots, like a penalty is 0.7 to 0.8 based on the league average you're using. If you take that plus, a 6 yard shot from a rebound off a goalie save or off the post, that's good. That adds up to more than one, and you can't have probabilities more than one. And at its core, XG is a unit of probability of a single shot, and we use it as like a little shorthand for counting up potential goals in a match, but that's not really the narrative of what it's representing. Like that, doing that for shots that are, if you were to look under the hood of the model and like account for defensive locations, be much less likely to go in, and the model, the XG of that would shrink compared to what it is without looking at that, which is what most public models are available looking at. It's just like, where's the dot on the goal box for the most part. That will lead you to think that, oh, well, New York City should have had 3 goals. Well, they were struggling to get one goal down 2-0, and the game state is what determined all of those things that the model's no longer able to capture efficiently. So the narrative is there was more struggle here than you would think by looking at a cumulative XG of 0.3.
No, for sure. And like, if you go, like, I really like FB Ref has the shot like timelines, and you can literally go chance by chance. And if you go chance by chance, it's like 0.14 chance for Dante Van Zier, and then like kind of nothing, 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 0.16 for Alonso Martinez for New York City. Call it about even. At in between those two, the Red Bull scored a long shot from Felipe Carballo. Then you have another Alonso Martinez chance for 0.15, and then you have a Dante Van Zier chance for 0.26. So like, at this point it's 2-0, but it's two good chances each. And after that, then you have like big New York chance, big New York chance, another big New York chance, another big New York chance, an okay Red Bull chance, an okay New York City chance. And it's really just kind of New York City the rest of the way until there's like a kind of big set piece chance at the end for the Red Bulls. But like, that sequencing matters, first off. And the second is that, like, you don't get any extra credit if none of them go in, which is like a kind of reductive thing to talk about. But, like, of course, you're going to be more attacking. It's a playoff game, and you're losing. It's not even like you're losing by one goal, you're losing by two goals. Like, yeah, you better try and put a bunch of stuff up. And yes, they can probably consider themselves unlucky that some of those chances didn't go in, right? Like, it is unfortunate for them that the sequencing in this case is that the Red Bull scored their chance before New York City scored theirs. Maybe it's a very different game in that case. But I think, like, people are going to come away from this Red Bulls playoff run where, like, they have been absolute game state masters, where, like, they have played games pretty even. They score first and then they park it. And I think it would be really easy to be like, oh, well, like, the Red Bulls had a negative expected goal difference against New York City, and like they basically played Columbus even, so there isn't really an argument there. But if you told me that they went to Orlando, to actually talk about Orlando, because that's the other half of this tie, is like if you told me they went to Orlando and scored first and Orlando racked up XG and lost, I would totally believe you. Harrison, on the Orlando side, they beat Atlanta 1-0 in what was ultimately a pretty comfortable game, but Atlanta were also desperately unlucky. Like Jamal Tiare goes off injured. Right before halftime, they bring on Daniel Rios, who is immediately subbed off for concussion because he blocks a clearance with his head 2 minutes
Man, that
into the
guy
second half.
cannot catch a break.
And they just had no real options to go chase the game, even at all. Did Orlando do anything for you? Like, were you moved at all by them in this game?
Honestly, not really. I mean, they closed out the game that they were given, right? And that's what you can say about them. But I mean, they weren't particularly great. I didn't think that there was nothing really sensational. I mean, Orlando City had some opportunities here and there, but they're all low leverage type shots. They nothing looked really great. A lot of it was off target. Like it just, you know, it was what it was. I mean, they just kind of It wasn't an exciting game, and I know we've talked a lot about that that being Orlando's kind of calling card. And I kind of actually have a question for you guys. How do you guys compare this Orlando team to what I kind of feel like is the Seattle their Seattle equivalent from the Western Conference? I feel like, you know, they do a really good job. Orlando does kind of minimizing the attacking opportunities. They do pretty well defending with the ball at times. They don't take a lot of high, you know, XG chances throughout the game. They kind of pick and choose when they counter. They're not exciting, but they grind out the games, and that's kind of what you can say about with Seattle. I feel like kind of feel like that's what we're looking at with Orlando, and it'll be kind of interesting to see how they approach the Red Bull, because I feel like the Red Bull are going to give them the ball, a lot of the ball.
Ben, how do you feel about that Seattle comparison? I think Seattle are just w are way better than them. Like, I
I
don't
think they
think it's even
are.
close.
I think stylistically it's fair, but I don't know that. I think Seattle has a more cohesive identity in terms of how they do that. I
That's
think
fair.
Orlando has talented players, and I think, I don't know. I think I feel like we haven't seen Oscar Pereja's Orlando really match up to the FC Dallas style. You know what I mean? And I don't know if it's a personnel issue that comes down to like him having to adapt to what Orlando City FO put together. But it doesn't feel stylistically the same. It feels safe. And it feels like they control the game with the ball, but
Safe. Yes.
they play safe. So I'm looking at their most recent game flows against Atlanta and against Charlotte. And, you know, Kieran, one of the thing you mentioned a lot here is, you know, at the relationship between XG and G plus, you know, XG tends to be a little higher than the G plus you generate.
Yeah,
Is
G
that
G
that's it?
yeah,
Or is it the other way around?
no, other way.
Okay.
XG converts at 3/4 of a G
Three
plus,
quarters.
something like that.
So against Charlotte at home, 0.15 XG, 0.2 offensive G plus. Again, on the road against Charlotte, 0.4 XG, 0.75 G plus.
Yucky.
It's
Yucky.
not a good conversion rate. You know, they're
So
not generating the goal dangerous chances based on the field, or like the field of play opportunity that they generate that G plus is picking up without the shots.
I don't want to beat the same drum, but Orlando won 0 of their 5 highest possession games. They won the XG in one of them. They won one of their 9 highest possession games, 2 of their 12 highest possession games. This is
Absolutely.
it. This is a team who has shown no ability to break teams down with the ball. Their XG in those games is mostly pretty bad. And they drew and lost both games to the Red Bull. They created a combined 1.1 XG across those two games. The Red Bull, to me, along with Seattle, are by far the two best defensive teams left in the competition. And I would
Definitely.
probably say the Red Bull are a little bit better than Seattle. Seattle had a slightly lower XGA this season, but I like the Red Bull a little bit more in terms of solidity, especially with some of the injuries that Seattle have. But we'll get on to that. I am picking Red Bull over Orlando. Ben, who've you got?
I've got Red Bulls as well.
Harrison?
Yeah, I have Red Bull. I am kind of curious to see if Orlando doesn't re kind of refuses to play the possession game and just kicks it long constantly.
They
And it's just kind of like, yeah.
they've not really done that. They've been a very high possession team from
They
us
have
this
been,
year.
yeah.
Like, I
They've
think
had that.
go
They've definitely had their moments for sure.
yeah, like they only had like 10 games in the regular season of 34 where they were below 50% possession. And it's like TFC, Columbus again. Like, not, there's not a game against the Union where I think they take a red card. Like, there's not a lot going on in there. On the other side, Seattle beat LAFC. I actually don't want to talk about that game that much because it did play out exactly how we said it would, that Seattle were gonna F around, or that LA were gonna F around and find out by being way too conservative. And they were way too conservative. And then they
And they
got done
found
in
out.
extra time. And we're not gonna talk about Olivier Giroud and like the weirdness of that transfer. Former Seattler Ravi Remeneni replied to my Blue Sky about how weird I thought that transfer was, saying like basically the same thing. And we're also not going to talk about LA like disintegrating Minnesota, who are reportedly, by Matt Doyle, engaging with anonymous soccer analysts. We're not going to talk about either of those games. We are going to talk about the league's best attack playing against maybe the league's best defense. Just actually, by XG, it is the league's best defense. That's where we're at. This is the unstoppable object. Unstoppable force goes against the immovable object. Is that the expression?
That's it.
Ben, how do you, before we let Harrison have his Seattle and his Washingtonian soapbox, what do you think about this game?
So I if it vindicates me, and in my channels I've been talking about how I've been waiting for the Galaxy to start vaporizing the rest of the league so that the Rapids weren't getting singled out on that. Because especially if you look at the home game that ended 4-1, that was an even game most of the way in terms of underlying numbers and lucky chances and Paintsill being able to curve the ball into the far post like he did in this exact game too. And then in the end, it just, they just can vaporize you in two instants. And it started like within the first minute against Minnesota. And it just exemplifies how dangerous this team is offensively. And you look at the underlying numbers, and they are the most. It's interesting because throughout the regular season, their team G goals added per game isn't necessarily as high as you'd think it'd be. But the goals and the XG they create from open plays just feels unmatched in this league, or at least this season right now. And just in terms of like overall attacking talent loaded, I think back to the Atlanta team. I think back to, I mean, Columbus currently, maybe they've got some collective talent close to this level, but just the key pieces here are so good and they fit so well together when this offense is clicking. And I had to watch two games of it, and now this beast is going to be unleashed upon everyone else. So
Harrison, you are coming into this game as a Seattle fan, going against a team that has put up less than 2 XG twice since August. Since August, above 2 XG every game except for two. And those two, guess what? They won both of them. They scored a combined 8 goals in the two games. They didn't put up 2 XG. What's your thought on this one?
I think that this it's really weird because both teams played each other, but they played each other like the most recent game that they played against each other this season was May 5th, I believe, unless they played in a game that I don't
There was
remember.
Leagues
Nope.
Cup too, wasn't
Was
there?
there a Leagues Cup? I
Yeah,
didn't know.
those
Oh, I
three
don't.
were.
You didn't play them in Leagues Cup, did you? I thought you played
I
LAFC.
honestly look this up.
Regardless, you're right. It is May 5th, and your game before that was like April or something.
Correct. And so it's really weird because, the situation with both teams, both kind of trying to get things solidified, so to speak. Seattle did play a heavy possession game in both accounts, and in both accounts, like Seattle really did a great job limiting the damage that LA could do. I mean, LA only scored one goal against in those two games.
So just to add, we do have Seattle played LA in the round of 32 of the League's Cup in August. Seattle won 3-1, 21 shots to 9. Pretty
I feel like
comprehensive.
there is outstanding details though with that. I feel like somebody was injured or there is stuff that was happening. I don't want to necessarily dismiss it, but
LA didn't
that had fallen
play.
off my
It
radar.
was in
So
Seattle too.
in
And this is
Seattle,
not going to
LA
be in
did not play
Seattle.
everybody. No Jovalich. No Jovalich in the team for that one. Otherwise, looks actually like reasonably first choice. Diego Fagundes started, so like make of that what you will. And Seattle is like their super lineup, the death lineup. So I
What's the
think
death lineup?
Nuhu, Reagan, Yaimar, Roldan, Vargas, Paolo, Rothrock,
Okay.
Rusnak, Roldan, Morris. To me, like the clearly best 11 players you have, and not Stefan Frey. They played A. Thomas. I don't know who that is, but
Andy Thomas. I mean, he's the heir apparent to Stephen Fry, but beyond that, I think that it's really interesting. I think every time they've played against Ricky Pooj, they've done a really great job at finding ways to shut down his passing lanes. And I if I recall from Leagues Cup, now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like they did a great job in that as well. But the one thing that they kind of struggled with at early parts was shutting down Gabriel Peck. And I think that that's going to be kind of the key, and I think it'll be interesting to see if they go back to that those wide fullbacks and go with a three in the back approach like they did against LAFC. I think that's something that I'd watch for and see if they try to mimic some of those same tendencies.
so Harrison, who are you picking?
Honestly, I've picked against Seattle the whole way. I think it's only appropriate that I pick them here. But I do want to say I've been a staunch Red Bull LA Galaxy the whole way. I think this is the year Red Bull win their championship. I think that's logical, but I feel like I have to pick the Sounders in this situation. I feel like the Sounders can do it, and I would really like to go to a MLS Cup game, so take my kid to it.
Ben, who's your pick, and give me your reasoning.
My pick is Galaxy, and I think they're going to score three goals, and I think Seattle's going to score less than three goals.
That is fair. I think one of the things about this Galaxy team that really suits them is that they know they can't defend, and because they know they can't defend, they are not particularly prone to the like freeze up and let the game get claggy thing that Seattle did to LAFC. And so for that reason, I'm going to pick the Galaxy. I think it will be a close game. We talked about this in our Slack chat about what is the most interesting iteration of the game, like what brings that out and what's the most boring. And I said, I think the most interesting is if LA score first, because Seattle have to come play now. And LA will have the space to transition, where I think Ben, maybe you or Harrison, I can't remember which, mentioned that actually if Seattle score first, then you get like, okay, LA have to like really risk it, and Seattle will get transitions. And I'm always a big fan of the old Battle of Helm's Deep game, where you have 11 players inside your box, and it's like the orcs are at the door, and Ricky Pooj is like the same height, maybe as a hobbit. So like, there's a connection there.
It
Any
was
final?
our the Helm's Deep theme was really well articulated in Slack, less so there, but I get the idea that you're going for.
You know how it goes. You got
Oh yeah,
everybody.
100%.
You
I
got
know
it.
exactly where you're going for, and I think it's accurate.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Seattle, I do not think any riders of Rohan are coming to your aid. That's going to be it from a shorter episode this week. It's Thanksgiving. This is going to come out Thursday morning, so listen to this while you like brine your turkey or something. I don't really know. These games are this weekend. We are going to pod pre-MLS Cup. And if MLS Cup is in, well, it'll be in LA or Seattle, you may hear a voice note from that game as well. We shall see. Anyways, that is all from us. Thank you all for listening. If you want to support the show, if you want to support ASA, check out the Patreon. It's one tier. It's $5 a month. We had a delightful conversation today about Nick Cushing as Greg Berhalter, and where I told Paul he cannot support a financial group. The NWSL season is over. Their championship wrap-up episode came out from the Expected Own Goals podcast. As always, enjoy the soccer.